Welcome to this episode of Naked Men Talking, a podcast exploring naturism and the power of getting your clothes off. Gareth Johnson. On today's episode, we're joined by Greg McKeon. Greg is a performer in the adult entertainment industry, creating content that fuels our fantasies. Greg, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, there's a lot we could talk about with you, but I sort of wanted to start with the Christmas tree farm, because is this right that you made the move from West Hollywood to Oregon to run a Christmas tree farm? Was that a natural thing for you to do?
So we were in the pandemic in Los Angeles, and I had quit my day job of being a fitness trainer. And I was doing OnlyFans full time, and things kind of took off during the pandemic. And at the same time, we were like looking for different places we could move to. I had just done Cocky Boys right before the pandemic, and they have kind of like a compound they film at in upstate New York. And I thought, oh, that would be fun if I had like a place for models to come and to film and stuff like that. So we moved up here, not to be Christmas tree farmers originally, but just to rent a place. And in Oregon, they don't have any renter discrimination. So when you apply, if you qualify, you automatically get approved for the place. Where in California, if you apply, you have to show up with like a bunch of other people, and then they pick which person they want.
What? Oregon is just first in, best dressed.
Yeah. So it's pretty easy in that regard. So we hadn't even seen the place, and we came up here and visited. And we fell in love with it. It's like down a half mile private driveway. And it was like the same thing we were paying in Los Angeles for like 20 acres up here. And then randomly enough, the neighbor came over and asked us if we wanted to buy his farm, because we're on a former 80 acre farm that's broken into four 20 acre plots. So yeah, we weren't exactly looking to buy a Christmas tree farm, but it kind of just fell into our lap. And here we are.
Because you're not from that part of the world, and you're not from a farming background. Mm-hmm. So when he said, oh, I've got this Christmas tree farm, do you want to buy it? It's just like, did you know what you were doing?
No. my husband is from Iowa, Colton, and he is like, he does all the outdoor stuff. I just do the digital stuff. But it's actually a lot more work than we had originally anticipated. The Christmas trees are more like the Christmas trees for wreaths. And less of like traditional Christmas trees. So they're like tall and skinny. And the previous owner kind of neglected them a little bit because it's zoned agriculture use. You get a break in property taxes if you're a farm. So he basically planted them and didn't really do much with them and just took the tax deduction. So now we have all these overgrown Christmas trees. Last year we sold a bunch for wreaths. We had a team come in like who was like a wholesaler, and he did all the work and cut them all down. But we have lots of trees out the window here. And then we have also other farm issues. Like we have blackberries that are invasive species that are like taking over. So we could easily be spending all day, every day doing farm things. But it's a little bit difficult with being a content creator to have that much free time to do it all the time.
That's the thing, but it's quite a nice USP, isn't it? To have that outdoorsy aspect. And because you invite people to come and sort of film with you, don't you? So you do get to, you know, I guess it's a setting that no one else really has.
Yeah, it's been nice. OnlyFans is a little bit sensitive sometimes if they think you're filming outdoor in public spaces.
Oh, sure.
So we always tag it and put this was filmed on a private farm. And so far it's been so good, but it's always a little bit worrisome. Some people are hesitant to film outside. We also have a greenhouse we film in, which has really nice light. So that's fun to film in. It's like a tropical plant greenhouse. My husband had a tropical plant business for a hot minute, so we acquired a whole bunch of plants.
He's a useful husband, isn't he?
He's very useful. He does all the practical things. I do all the digital things, and then it works together. Yeah, we definitely balance each other out.
We talked about how that's not your sort of home turf in Oregon, but is this right that you sort of moved around quite a bit when you're growing up with your family, that you're working around Europe and that kind of stuff? How did that happen?
Yeah, so I was born in San Diego and then lived in California until I was 13. And then my dad accepted a job working overseas for the embassy and then for the UN War Crimes Tribunal. So we were in Europe for, they were there for 6 years. I was there for 5 years from 13 to 18 and lived in Latvia and in Holland. And yeah, it was great. And then I moved back for college when I was 18.
But that's a pretty formative part of your life, isn't it? That sort of late teens. I was wondering how that sort of shaped your perspective on the world, to have had that experience of living in those different countries at that point of your life.
Yeah, for sure. When I was in Latvia, it was a little bit like Russian culture is a little bit homophobic. And my friend there, another American, grew up in Moscow. And he asked me, he's like, are you gay? And I'm like, no. And he's like, well, good, because they don't like gay people here. They'll beat you up. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, not gay. And then he's like, so do you want to jerk off? And I was like, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
As long as we don't call it gay, then it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, but that definitely made me a little bit hesitant to come out in my teenage years. Like, I didn't come out to my friends from high school until I was 21. And then we moved to Holland, which was, you know, one of the first countries, or the first country to have gay marriage, where being gay is like totally accepted. But still in the back of my head, I was like, no, it's not good. I mean,
it would have messed you up a bit, wouldn't it? If you'd started in Holland, things would have been different.
Yeah, I think so. Like, when I told all my friends from Holland, they were like, yeah, that's fine. Like, not an issue. No one really cared. And then living in Holland, they have a much more forward approach on like tolerance and letting people do what they want. Like, the drinking age was 16 for beer when I was there, and they gave us like freedom to roam around as a kid. So I kind of grew up quick. And then going back to visit as a gay man, it's quite nice because they have lots of saunas and sex clubs, and at the big parties, they have dark rooms, and it's not as held back as it is in California, where because of liquor laws, they can't do so many things that would be normal in gay clubs all over Europe, for example.
Yeah, no, exactly. So you went back for college to the States. How did you sort of end up exploring the world of adult entertainment? Did you sort of start with the go-go dancing? Because that was a big part of your life as well.
Yeah, when I was 21, I transferred colleges a few times. I went to a first year at school in Connecticut, and then I went on a program called Semester at Sea, like a boat trip around the world for 100 days on like a little cruise ship. And I saw all these people all over the world that were like happy and seemed to really enjoy their life, and they weren't like just working all the time. They might not have had a lot of the opportunities that like Western cultures have, but I mean, a lot of the time I felt that they looked like, at least from spending a brief time there, like they had a more enjoyable life. So I kind of always knew that I didn't want to work the traditional route and be stuck in a cubicle and doing things I hated. So after that, I went to Czech Republic for a semester of college. I tried to find the Bellamy boys, but they were all unavailable. And then I transferred schools. And when I was a transfer student, I had 6 months in between, because it was like a spring transfer program. I went to UC Berkeley. And so I went down to Los Angeles and found a guy, and we started dating, and he hooked me up with go-go dancing. And so I got into it that way, and then go-go danced all through college and then afterwards. And then I became a personal trainer. When I was just getting into UC Berkeley, I decided I was going to do porn. I decided I was going to do Sean Cody or Falcon Studios. And I like applied online, and this was before cell phones like had video features, like good video, and like you couldn't email video from the phones. And so I used like the family digital camera and the family computer. And then when I sent it in, my dad was on the computer, and I don't know how he found it. I thought I hit everything. I don't know why I didn't just delete it. But so he's like sitting there, and then all of a sudden he's like, calls my mom up, and he's like, oh my God. And he's like religious. He doesn't say that. And then my mom walks in, and she's like, oh my God. And like my brother's sitting playing on the computer, and he's like, oh my God. And so they told me to like come home when I was done with work. And like my family was always trying to get me to come out to them, like especially my mom. She knew from like time I was a little kid. She's like, are you gay? Are you sure you're not gay? And I'm like, no, leave me alone. And so then when they found that I was going to do gay porn, they were like, oh, so you're definitely gay if you're going to do gay porn.
That's the coming out done with. Let's talk about the porn.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm not gay, and I'm not going to do porn. I didn't think this would be a problem. I was just looking to make easy money and thought it would be an interesting opportunity. And they wanted me to like sit down and tell them who I was. And I was like, we're not going to do all that, but I will tell you I won't do it, you know? So I didn't do porn until I was 31, actually. My mom died like a year before I started doing porn. And when she died, I was like, well, I told her that I wouldn't do porn, and I'm now not like a 21-year-old, like with my whole
that
life.
That promise doesn't have to be held for the lifetime kind of thing. You know, that has an end date, doesn't it?
And especially like if you're just going to end up dying, like if it's just like do what you want to do in this life. Like, there's no point in wishing you could do something if it's all just going to end and then it's over with. So it was kind of gave me some perspective to do the things I wanted to do. So I got into doing OnlyFans first, and I was still like shy. I wouldn't show my face. I wasn't doing full sex content. I didn't even know if that was allowed on OnlyFans when we first started. It was a little bit ambiguous of like what kind of content was allowed.
No, totally. It was a bit, real gray area until everyone's like, oh, it is actually for porn. Let's just get on with
Yeah,
it.
and there weren't that many guys when I started because I started in like 2017. So and then my husband did porn when he was 18 when he first moved to LA. So when he started to find out how much money I was making, he's like, okay, I'll do this too. And then he was always like, come on, show your face. Like, what's the issue? Like, who cares? And so little by little, he was showing his face on the page. I wasn't showing my face. And then I was looking at some of the studios of like which studios were popular. And at the time, Family Dick Porn Studio was like the number one on Pornhub. And I was like, well, these videos are kind of fucked up and interesting. I was like, well, if it's number one, I could go work for them, I guess. So I started working for them, and that helped the OnlyFans get more fans and find new people. But OnlyFans actually doesn't allow that type of content. So like over the years, we've been kind of learning as we've gone, like what's allowed on OnlyFans, what's not. Like they don't like role play, they don't like dad son role play, they don't like public. So there's all these like different things that have changed as time's gone, which is
No,
fine.
but also, and they're unpredictable as well. So you think you know the rules, but then suddenly videos get taken down for some reason. You have to try and figure out where you've gone wrong.
Yeah, now I always read the terms of services, and I'm like, whenever they message and say there's an issue, I correct it and say, thank you so much. Thank you for letting me know. Like, I mean, the thing with tech companies is if you're an asshole to them, they'll just hit the like goodbye button. The floor falls out from underneath you. So some of the guys over the years have had issues with them and tried to like go public and talk
Doesn't
negatively
help.
about them. And it's like, no, I mean, things change because laws change. They get, they're not doing it because they necessarily want to. There's like a war on porn right now. So everything's kind of changing a lot. So that's what I've always told new creators is that in this industry, it's just about going with the flow and figuring out what the next step is if things change from where you're at.
Yeah, oh, that's such good advice. Hey, can I go back a step? Because you talked about how you were go-go dancing and porn was something you always wanted to do. I guess, why was go-go dancing something that appealed to you? Because did you have a dance background, or why was that something that really sort of connected for you?
So when I was a kid, I used to see like when we go to San Francisco as a family, there'd be a guy in a box like standing there, like getting money and doing the robot. You put a coin in and he would,
Oh,
and I
like a
was like,
street
that's what
performer,
I,
sort
yeah, I was
of.
like, that's what I want to do. I want to be like a street performer like that. And then when I was 14, one of my friends from Latvia was this German guy, and he invited me to spring break to his family in Munich. And he was like, yeah, we can go out to the nightclubs. And I was like 14, he was like 16. He's like, they won't check ID, it doesn't matter. We went to this big like entertainment complex with all these different nightclubs, and one of them they had like go-go dancers like on a box dancing. I said, that looks like a fun gig, like, so I thought at first when I got into go-go dancing it would be like dancing, entertaining, like, and it was at some point. There were some of the bigger parties where you would do that kind of thing and be away from the crowd and get paid a little bit better. And then there were a lot of the clubs where it was like, no, you're basically an escort, you're here for the dollar, you're going to do whatever it takes. You're friendly to people. People will push the limit. People think that if they're tipping go-go dancers, it gives them like a carte blanche to like do whatever they want, which it was kind of fun to have people who like when I would consent to them like grabbing my dick or like like making sure they had a really good time. And there were all these like laws in California about what you can and can't do. So it was always something in the back of my head like, we have to make sure that we're still operating within the laws. But then you're like a gay guy with another gay guy, and it's like he wants to grab your dick. I mean, like,
But
naturally.
was that a validation kind of thing for you to have that sort of admiration coming from people? Or is it more of an exhibitionist kind of thing where you think, I just really have a bit of a kink for, showing the world who I am kind of thing?
So I remember I had a personal training client who was like, he was an exhibitionist, and he's like, yeah, you're an exhibitionist, you just love this. And I was like, no, I just more like the money. I more liked I liked being at a nightclub on a box away from everybody so that I
Yeah.
wouldn't have to be like talking to people, and I could kind of like see what's going on in the club, find people that were interested, and like keep myself entertained with them, and then go in the back into the office and like chill for 30 minutes and not have to talk to people.
Yeah.
It was I'm kind of a shy person, so it was a good opportunity for me to be able to go out and to be in nightlife. But then once I quit go-go dancing, like past couple of years, I've gone out to gay bars and I'm like, what do? We have to talk
how
to
does
each
this
other?
Work? Yeah.
Like, well, there's no office like to like chill in.
Where's the green room? Because like,
and then I was drinking alcohol when I was go-go dancing, and then when I stopped, I was like, wait, you have to pay for alcohol?
Yeah.
This is crazy. So it was fun in my 20s. It got a little bit, the clubs in Los Angeles, they didn't always treat the dancers the best. They wouldn't pay very well. They wouldn't give drink tickets. I mean, it wasn't the like most lucrative thing. And this was before OnlyFans. So if it would have been during OnlyFans, then you could like, you know, market to people, give them like a little QR code or put a tattoo with a QR code and like let people find you that way. So it was really putting in the work to make a little bit of money, but it was fun. I wouldn't go back and change anything.
The way you think is very entrepreneurial almost. And do you enjoy that side of the business? Because like with, you know, content creation and fan subscription platforms, you've really got to work all of those angles. But is that something that sort of comes naturally to you in terms of that business side of things?
Yeah, I love the hustle of like trying to make money and figure it out. Now that I'm doing OnlyFans full-time, it's become a little bit more stressful. When I was doing it and doing personal training, it was great because personal training paid for my life. And then OnlyFans was all bonus money. And so when people would ask for crazier things at the beginning and you have to do this. And I'm like, I don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I want to do. Yeah. Where now it's like, people are like, we want to see this and we want to see that. I'm like, okay, we should probably do a Colton lick my foot. Like, let's try collabing with people that I wouldn't normally collab with, which I was doing like more of trying to collab with who I thought I was supposed to collab with and not who I wanted to. And then I went to therapy for a year and I realized, you know what, it's more worth it if I'm like really into it because it is sex and not just trying to force myself to do things I don't want to do. So now if I don't have chemistry with people, I won't film with them. Which is something that I've learned in the past couple of years from when I started. And that's what I tell new creators too. I'm like, you don't have to film with people just because you show up to film with them. It's like a Grindr date. Sometimes people show up and it's just not the right chemistry.
Yeah, no, still an option.
Like, there's no pressure. But some of the creators, like, because it is their livelihood and they need the collab and they get excited for the possible exposure from working with a big creator, they'll get really upset if things change. And I understand that side of it too. I mean, sometimes it is disappointing or frustrating, but it just is how it goes. So I tell new creators, I'm like, if people cancel on you, it's not because they don't like you. It's because maybe they woke up and they can't get fucked in the ass today.
Exactly.
Or they're mentally not there today. I mean, a lot of these guys, I mean, the mental gymnastics you have to do to like stay wanting to have sex and stay happy and like, especially with the ebb and flow of being a content creator where sometimes the money is really good and sometimes it's harder to come by. So recently it's made me think like, what if I had a real job?
Really?
What if I had a salary? What would that be like? But I don't actually think that would work out well for me. I mean, I am trying to figure out what the next step is. Just because I always say you want to leave while you're having fun. And I've been doing this for 7 years and it's getting to the point now where, not that it's not fun, but it's not bringing the same joy as when I first started.
Sure, sure. If it starts to feel a bit more like a grind, then it's harder to stay motivated, isn't it?
Yeah, there's like a little bit of burnout. And I mean, it's like we're producing a video a week. And with the war on porn, I kind of see the writing on the wall that if things keep changing and conservatives keep getting elected and taking over, they might make it harder and harder. For us as an industry. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons I used to think about making my own like studio and doing that kind of thing. But with all the changes and with all these new,
like, it's just going
to
get harder.
Age verification laws, but really they're trying to just make it so that there's no porn on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it easier having a husband to film with and doing it together, or does that sort of create different dynamics in the relationship?
Well, when I started doing OnlyFans, I made a pact to myself that I wouldn't ruin sex for myself because I kind of like ruined going out to bars, being a go-go boy 5 or 6 days a week. And I didn't really want to do that for a long time. So I knew I didn't want to do that with sex. So we still have independent sex lives without each other, and we still have sex with each other off camera. Some of the most successful guys will only have sex on camera and will tell people, no, we have to film it, and they're just go, go, go. But we have a little bit more of a balance. He is more interested in doing the farm work and like going on hikes and putting down the phone and disconnecting, and like where I'm like, we should be making a reel. Do we make a YouTube page? He's like, no, we should just enjoy. We're like,
We
we're
could breathe a
here.
bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So it balances out. I think that we both feel that doing something else would be good, like in the long term. So we're not doing this for the next 10 years, but we don't really know what that is. And like, this is one of the problem content creators have, is that the money is so good that it's like hard to figure out what'll give you that kind of free time to be doing what you want while still making a life of it.
Yeah, lots of transferable skills though, isn't it? Like, so in terms of the experience you've got is huge. It's just how you could apply that into a money-making venture.
Yeah, so I mean, I have some ideas, but I want to do something that's fun and that is enjoyable. Like, I'm thinking of organizing gay travel trips
Nice.
for guys and taking them all over the world. I mean, I love traveling. That's one of my first passions. From living in Europe and experiencing new cultures, I have a degree in history, so that's always been something that's really interested in me. So just trying to figure out what that would look like. So I don't know. I'm still grateful to be doing it. We're still making hot content. There's no checking out in the business. It's like if you check out, it's over for you. So
Yeah.
we're still full steam ahead. If you're listening to this, you can still
Sign
count that we're
up.
going to
Subscribe
deliver.
now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we love it. We love every minute of it. And we do. I mean, we do love a lot of it. We meet a lot of great guys, and we get to host cool models on the farm, and we get to travel to cool places and meet people. So it's really fun.
Has your relationship with your body changed through that whole process? So I guess I'm interested in what your relationship with your body was like as you're growing up, but then through that whole go-go dancing and filming process, and how's because your body has changed over the years as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when I was in my 20s, I used to be like insecure and think like, oh, my body's not good enough. And like, I was like living at the gym and like making sure that I would always like look perfect. Like, I thought I was like looking extra lean, but really now I realized I was just dehydrated the whole time.
Just unhealthy.
More than anything, dehydrated with like a little bit of a drug habit. But and I was like, no, I need to be more ripped. I need to be more buff. Take more stuff. And I would have never take like steroids, but take all the different supplements and the powders and all the different like supplements that I would think would be better. And then once I started doing OnlyFans, the money was came in a lot faster. And I was like, okay, maybe I am enough. Like maybe
Yeah.
this is like fine. And but when you start doing OnlyFans or something like that, you start when you feel like you're at your physical best. And then over the 6 years, like especially moving to Oregon, like now I sit down and I work on the computer most of the day. So to have the body of a personal trainer, go-go dancer, while also working on the computer is quite difficult.
Yeah, no, impossible. Yeah.
And I was a stoner. I'm a retired stoner now for like 6 months, but like smoking weed in Oregon, we have tons of weed, and just like getting high and getting the munchies and like, it was like, okay, this is not good for business. Like, hang it up. But then when I would lose weight, sometimes I would like gain a little bit of weight, and you have to keep filming. You can't just like stop filming. And then I would lose weight, and then people would write to me on Grindr and be like, we liked you better as a bear. And I was like, I was a bear? I didn't know that. But there's like people that like all sorts of things. So that's what I've realized doing this, is that there's people are gonna be more into certain looks or certain aspects, but yeah, there's something for everybody.
You talked about how some people prefer bears and things, and also you referenced the sort of daddy role play stuff that you were doing with Family Dick and that kind of thing. When did you sort of embrace the daddy identity, or is that something you actually embrace, or is that just a role play?
Yeah, so with Family Dick, I was originally like the big bro, or like I wasn't the dad, and then I was gonna be the coach, and then the coach tested positive for an STD, and then the new coach was like a black guy and it was like a white twink. So they were like, okay, well, how about he'll be the coach? and you'll be the dad. Oh, sorry, the new dad was a black dad for a white boy. And I said, okay, yeah, fine, I'll be the dad. And then when I was living in Los Angeles, I had a couple auditions to be like an actor for like different TV shows. Like one of the shows was like Teen Wolf or like the pilot. And I wasn't an actor. I just knew people from Go-Go Dancing. And I went in and just blew the audition and was like awful. And the woman was like, that was awful. And I told my ex, who was an actor, and he was like, they're not supposed to tell you that. Like, they're not supposed to tell you that.
But it
like,
must have been really bad if they told you it was bad. Or
yeah, it was really bad. I forgot all the words, couldn't talk. And then when I watched the first role play where I was playing the like the pervy dad, I was like, wow, that was pretty good acting.
Oh, wow. Where'd you pull that from?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's just like, I've role played before and I was like, okay, this what's happening. All right. And then I realized that because I started at 31, there's like this kind of like middle, like you were the young, hotter thing. And then you kind of aren't. And then you're a daddy. So I'm like, well, I might as well just jump into the daddy category.
Skip the middle bit. Let's just get into the dad stuff. Yeah.
And then as I get older, people will know that I'm playing the dad and they won't then like hold me back and say, oh, he lost it. What happened? And like, but even when I was in my 20s, I never thought that I could like marry a wealthy man because I thought for sure my looks would just drop off a cliff. Like at a certain age, it would just, like no self-confidence. Like I didn't realize that I would still look like this at this age and still be making money.
Looking
doing
back,
it.
You wish you had married the rich man now because you could have done it. You could have done it.
I mean, I'm happy that I'm married to Colton. We've been together for 13 years, but I wish that we would have both married the rich man. I think about that all the time. I'm like, but I like being in control of my own destiny. I like the fact that no one can take away from what I've made of myself. My advice to the new creators too is also, I'm like, same thing my mom told me that I didn't listen to. You can fall in love with the rich one just as easily as you can fall in love with the poor one.
That is excellent advice.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's my final question. Speaking sort of advice, you know, and you have talked about, you know, things you've learned along the way. What advice or guidance would you give to someone who was thinking about launching, you know, their career in the fan subscription sites or even just starting out as a go-go boy?
I mean, for the new creators, I always tell them pay your taxes.
Crucial.
Like save, pay your taxes. We got a little bit, we bought a farm and started renovating and doing stuff like that and caught a little bit behind and it was a big nightmare. So I always tell new creators, save for your taxes. And then also is always talk to people who you're going to collaborate with about what they're into. And take the 5 seconds to say, hey, what are you into? What are you not into? Are there any like surprises that you like to do in your videos? Because what works for one creator is not going to work for other creators. Some people if I'm bottoming, I like them to like look at me like we're in love and like treat me like a human. But when I first started, I was a toxic top who wasn't bottoming. And I didn't realize this. And I would just fucking we're going to make a hot video. Fuck yeah, take it.
The best tops are really good bottoms. Isn't that like, that's a universal truth, isn't it?
Well, so now I only like bottoming for people who also bottom.
Yes!
Because they know, don't just jam it in, like find out what, if they're comfortable. But then there's other people who like, I mean, I've met some people like on Grindr, for example, who are like, just stick it in without any lube. And I'm like, oh my God.
What?
Like, who are you? Yeah. Like, so I would tell my husband, I'm like, yeah, he was like, it was like a, like back alleyway kind of fuck where they're just like, go for it. So I don't know what works for one person. Isn't going to work for everybody. With go-go dancing, I would tell people that if you're going to go-go dance in today's day and age, do OnlyFans. And then when you meet people who are tipping you well, give them a little business card with your QR code on it, with your websites, so then they can keep supporting you.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. You can find me on Twitter at GTV London. Today's guest has been Greg McKeon. You can find him on Twitter at Greg is the word. It's a bit complicated. It's GRG is the word, WERD, Greg is the word.
Yeah, it was like bird is the word. So Gerg is the word.
Gerg is the word. Stay naked, stay sexy, and we'll see you next time. Bye.